and McCann.
Greetings. Welcome to Wake the Dead. Today, we are very happy to have a new guest to the show, Mr. Nathaniel Gillis. Welcome, Nathan. Hello.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. It's great to be on with you.
Awesome. This is going to be a very informative conversation for me because we have been learning about non-corporeal spirits, and with our friend Lynn Monet, we had two episodes with her on Wake the Dead, and she was it was just wonderful conversations, and I learned so much, and it's fascinating. And she wanted me to speak with you on this show. You, sir, are a demonologist. And can you tell us a little bit about that, about yourself?
Yeah, so, well, I could start with what a demonologist is. I'm not an exorcist. A lot of people get confused with the two. Mm-hmm. But my passion, for whatever reason, and I'll get into that here in a little bit, but my passion has been to research the darker nuances of this phenomenon, the way it interacts with us, the various cognitive interfaces it employs in our presence. And that includes some very, very sinister stuff, possession cases where possession actually leads to pregnancies, missing wow. fetus syndrome, scarifications under eyelids. And so that's been my focus as of late. But here within the last, I'd say, year or so, my colleagues and I say that because I've spoke to them in depth about this particular point, what we're starting to realize is that for the last 50, 60 years, the paranormal community has been compartmentalizing this intelligence. And so now what we're researching is the possibility that we're not dealing with a multiplicity of phenomena, but we're dealing with various incarnations and evolutions of a singular intelligence that has coexisted along our species throughout history. And so it's a mouthful. But my approach to this, my discipline being demonology, we're talking again about possession cases, the more sinister aspects of this intelligence going from biblical antiquity to modernity. And so it has been my discipline. But as you'll see when we talk about the research and others are doing, once I got to a certain place in my work where I realized that, okay, I tripped over something. You know, and so I begin to ask deeper, more profound questions about my own discipline, what it is I am and what it is I'm actually doing. And that has kind of influenced me to go into a new direction. And we will discuss that in depth.
Interesting. So the big thing that I didn't ever really hear before is you are saying that it's the evil force that is plaguing humanity is not like separate evil consciousnesses. It's like right. one unified piece, kind of the same way where we imagine ourselves as a fractal piece of God with our life force animating mm-hmm. us. That in the same way works for them, where they're a fractal piece of this evil.
Yes. Singular wow. intelligence that has been masquerading as various entities throughout history. And the way I kind of saw through that mask is by going and stripping these case studies of any religious dogmatism in looking at the behavioral patterns of these alleged intelligences. And that's when I realized that throughout history, there are different kinds of evolutions that this phenomenon has taken as it has co-evolved alongside our species. But in each and every incarnation, it would reincorporate agendas. And it's fascinating to me because when I'm researching this stuff, I'm thinking, okay, well, why is it that we have the missing fetus syndrome in ritual bowls in Mesopotamia. Why is that taking place if, in fact, this phenomenon is new, right? And so slowly but surely, I started asking myself questions, and my model of this intelligence, my model of the paranormal itself began to fall apart. It began to collapse upon itself. And so that's when I said, you know what, I'm going to be daring here, and I'm going to kick over these walls that have divided these fields of research, and I'm going to build bridges, because it's quite possible, probable, that we are dealing with an intelligence that is incarnating and reincarnating itself from the dawn of history right into where we are today in modernity. And if that is the case, then it begins to draw questions out of us as experiencers and researchers that perhaps we've never even thought to ask. Number one, what is it? Number two, where does it come from? Number three, how is it evolving? Is it evolving in our absence, or is it evolving according to our awareness of it? Now that, my friend, is a profound question, and one that we will dive into first. But and I don't want to ramble. I tend to just take over.
I love it. Please. Yeah. No, but this is great.
If it is, in fact, evolving according to our awareness of it, then we do have cases of that in history, and specifically within wildlife, where other species, specifically within the model of the predator and prey, where the predator itself, it evolves according to the awareness of the prey, and it evolves in order to evade. And there are nuances of that witnessed in this intelligence.
Wow. So it is learning the better ways to conquer us in our consciousness, and it's okay.
You hit the nail on the head. Yes, to evolve according to our awareness of it, and then the next step is to evolve in order to evade.
Wow.
Now that speaks to the malevolent nature of this intelligence. If it was all love and light, then why is it hiding from us? It seems to fall apart.
Well, what is it? You said that the agenda repeats. What is that agenda? What is it doing?
Well, there is a self-replication of species present through and through. Now, the hybridization program, as we know it within ufology, did not begin in ufology. It did not begin in the so-called UFO abduction phenomenon. It originated in antiquity when these entities were erecting altars and disclosing, I say that with intention, disclosing technology to practitioners of high sorcery.
Wow.
And so,
like the ancient aliens kind of idea, where like some higher race taught us to, and then the priests were the authority figures for the peasants and so
right,
on.
Right. Yeah, they had created their own priesthood and their own prophets. And so this past February, I was in the UK in Manchester, and I gave a lecture at the Awakening Conference, and I talked about how that in antiquity, there was an intelligence in the ether that was wanting to become incarnate. And so what it began to do was groom practitioners. We see that during the first erection of altars throughout the Levant in Mesopotamia, specifically earthen altars, altars that were constructed of stones uncut by human hands. So essentially the practitioner would go out to an undisclosed location underneath the stars, the cosmology of stars, erect this altar and begin to communicate with whatever this phenomenon is in the ether. It was in that moment that we see an explosion of technology within our species. Specifically one thing, and this is going to blow your mind, especially if you're unfamiliar with my work, and you're like, what? Yeah, so watch this. So during this time frame when the phenomenon was coming incarnate, we had a series of events that took place. Number one, we had the phenomenon wanting to become incarnate by virtue of two ways. Number one was impregnation. Number two was implantation. And so by virtue of ritual magic, the phenomenon self-replicated its species. Number one, this is crazy. Number one, we have the advent of what's called the ritual of teraphim. And that is when the practitioner would take a small piece of metal and carve the name of an unclean spirit into it, and then implant that into a body. The consciousness of that entity would merge with the metal, would step into that biological avatar and possess it, like we've seen throughout history in possession cases.
Wow.
So we see that as the implant, because that's what ufology wants us to believe.
Yes.
But it's not modern technology. That's another lie the phenomenon is propagating into the field. It's ancient technology.
Right.
And during this time frame, then we move into the hybridization program and the missing fetus and all that. But yeah, I think it's fascinating.
So the impregnation method must go along the lines of Aleister Crowley's Moonchild book.
Correct. Absolutely.
100%. Interesting. So the listeners that don't know, the Moonchild, there was a magician who impregnated a woman, and while she was pregnant, he influenced the development of the fetus through ritual magic and ceremonial magic to, in a sense, like apparently in ancient magic, there's like this span of time where the fetus doesn't have a soul yet. Mm-hmm. And with this ceremonial magic, the magician influences which soul or incarnate or like non-corporeal being gets to inhabit the child that is being born. And absolutely, this actually, we even see this in Eyes Wide Shut. Those women at the ritual, mm-hmm, are being impregnated through same type of ritual. So please continue. That's very interesting.
This is high sorcery. This is dark stuff.
Right.
And so now there are three variants of that ritual. Number one is called the Red Rite. And James Frazer of the Golden Bow writes about that. The second one is called the Ultimate Black Mass. Now, we're going to get to that in a second, because we're going to sum up demonology as an entire field of research and realize, wait a minute, perhaps we've been witnessing one single event. We've just seen it through different pockets of information, different screenshots, but it's one singular event. So anyways, so the self-replication by virtue of impregnation, the hybridization program, again, did not start in modernity. A lot of ufologists, their research may have started in the 70s, but this phenomenon didn't, unfortunately. This has been here for a long, long time, at least ever since the dawning first breaths of ritual magic. And when I say this, it's controversial, because I said it on a UAP show, and then like before I went to England, then as soon as I got back from England, they deleted the whole episode. So that's how controversial it is. So the model that we were previously operating on within ufology was a secular, materialist, scientism model. Essentially, what I'm saying is it was based upon materialism.
Right.
Right. The materialist.
From our scientific perspective, we have already divorced the spirit from the material. That's absolutely how modern science is anyway. So it only makes sense that that's how we would view it. So please. Yeah.
Right. Absolutely. And we didn't realize until there were certain experiments ran that the occult is connected. Now, what do I mean by we didn't realize? Well, we had cases like Albert Bender building altars and George Hunt Williamson creating homemade Ouija boards. Right. And then extraterrestrials. Yeah. They're coming through talking to these practitioners. But for a period of time in ufology, researchers didn't even want to talk about that because it contradicted their current model of the phenomenon. But keep that in mind. So now again, we have the impregnation where the phenomenon was literally still doing it today, but abducting women and inseminating them with a fetus. And it wasn't just the abduction accounts that were taking place, but literally what we would consider to be dream demons, where entities were inducing victims into dreamlike states, stepping into the dream itself. Yes.
Wow. Like an incubus?
Oh. Yes. We're going to get there.
Okay.
You're right on trail.
Okay.
You're right on track, buddy. So inducing them into dreamlike states and then causing them to be compromised in ways they were not prepared for.
Does that make it so that they accept it willingly by putting the, okay, I see. Because in right. like a lot of times our free will is required for this type of inhabitation by the demon or whatnot. Correct. As far as I know, like, okay, thank you.
I'm still working with that as well, because there are some issues that I have with that, even though that's the leading theory, you know, and I believe in it to a degree. So, but anyways, we'll get to that in a second, buddy. But so here we have the beings or this intelligence coming through dreamlike states, inducing people into dreamlike states. And then the literature suggests that they were either just giving them a nightmare and then manipulating the situation, or they were actually stepping into the nightmares themselves. Now, I had an encounter similar to that. Years ago, before I was even in the field, I got off work. I was working at a factory. I went home to bed, took a hot shower, and went to bed. I was very tired. It was a long week. I instantly go into this deep sleep. In the middle of this dream, there was a spiritual presence there, and I could not control it. It was very, very strange to me. And in the dream, there was a featureless shadow woman mounting me, and she had long black hair. Matter of fact, at the time, if you were to take my ex and put her in a room, turn the lights off, that would have been her. I would have thought, hey, that's wow. Ellie.
So maybe the demon was using your memories to.
Yes. Yep. Whoa. 100%. And we're going to get to that too. Whoa. Yep. So in this event, it is mounting me, and I, in the nightmare, I'm fighting her off. So I'm doing this number, I'm screaming, yelling, and at a certain point, I become semi-awake, and then I start hitting my ex on the back, going, is this you? It's crazy, but I'm like, is this you? Is this you? Whoa. And then to my astonishment, when I woke up, the being was literally on top of me.
You could see it with your waking eyes.
Correct. Wow. And so this is why, again, when we're reading dream demon literature, having been an experiencer myself of this phenomenon, okay, it's not just they're inducing us to dreamlike states. It's right. possible they're coming to me because they're coming through me.
Right. Like the dreamlike state is what it's like the right. way that the way that a mosquito gives you a drug so that you don't feel it while it drains your blood. Right. But then when Absolutely. It flies away, it's itchy because of the drug that it injects into you. That's interesting. So the dream itself keeps you asleep while it feeds.
Right? Correct. To induce someone into that state. Whoa. And it's in the middle of these dreamlike states that decisions are made based upon false pretenses.
I see. No. So it's like a false free will because they give you this false reality.
Correct.
You make the wrong choice. Okay.
Right. Wow. Now, there is a measure of belief that takes place. Now, again, I was talking about the hybridization program in antiquity, but I have to dive into the roots before I get to the branches. So what we're dealing with, again, is they were coming through the dreams, or they were inducing these experiencers in the dreamlike states. Now, we knew that as incubi encounters. And in incubi encounters, the beings would appear as former lovers, a boyfriend, that kind of thing, husbands that are deceased or even just out of the room. Right. We knew that in incubi literature and case studies, but we didn't realize why it was wearing the mask. Huh. Right?
Yeah.
What is actually going on here? We didn't realize that there was a methodology employed by this intelligence. It was not limited to these beings manifesting as former lovers, husbands, boyfriends, and all that. It's not true. And for a while, specifically within demonology, and I say this, even from Father Sinistrari beyond to Bernard of Gordon to Montague Summers, to some of our modern demonologists, and then to today, 21st century, we really thought that was the extent of it. Okay, they're just trying to gain consent. And yet, I discovered a Coptic manuscript written and preserved by Egyptian monks that pulled the mask off of the mask itself. It made perfect sense in a very disturbing way. Because if we're dealing with the self-replication of species, then this is going to be fitting hand in glove, if you will. So in the Apocrypha of John, it was a commentary on what was recorded in the book of Genesis chapter 6 in the Bible. But they went deeper than perhaps anybody would have ever thought they could have done. But in this text, in the long codex, it says that these beings manifested to women in the images of their husbands. Oh, okay, incubi, check. But it says that they stared into the eyes of these women while they were copulating with them. And so in this scenario already, the woman is thinking that this is my husband. All is well. It's consensual. Everything is great, okay? And then it says, and it reveals a unique pathology that I have been tracking throughout history, even up to today with Jeffrey Epstein. And that was at the moment of conception, when the insemination took place, the entity would stare into the eyes of the experiencer and then take the mask off. That's the husband's mask. That's the husband. And then it would stare into her eyes as its original apparition.
Wow. Kind of like Rosemary's Baby when she's getting raped.
Yes. Oh, yes.
Oh, my God.
This is dark stuff.
But then it's the true form, and there's no lie in that moment. So then,
it's already done.
It doesn't have to live the lie, or it doesn't have to be conceived in a lie. It's like,
correct.
That's very interesting. Wow.
Oh, it gets deeper. Now, this entire ritual is constructed around what's called an obstetric belief that whatever man the woman was focused upon at the moment of insemination, she will bear the material image of that man through her womb as a child.
Wow. So that way, when it takes off the mask, the child is going to be a demon child.
It will bear the physical avatar of the apparition that fathered it.
Wow.
Deep. Very sinister.
Yeah. And this is like, I've always thought that the only real, like, demons want to be incarnate. They want the flesh to feel the feelings. Like, maybe they're not allowed to incarnate anymore. They have to feed on the negativity, because Lynn was telling us that if the demons were to feed on, like, positive emotions, that would bring them towards the light and the unification with the oneness that all souls go to, and they're trying to be separate, and so they can only feed on the negative. It's really...
Yes, dark stuff.
Wow.
Yeah, now here's what's so fascinating about this, and we're going to kind of... it's going to coalesce, and we'll put a bow on it, and then I'll be like, okay... Okay. That makes sense, right? So what we have here, though, is we have the physical body of the apparition. And the question was asked, okay, why would they want to self-replicate a body that looks like their apparition? Well, that's easy. Because if you look at possession cases, the role of possession was not the relocation of consciousness. The role of possession was the replication of life. I want a body to inhabit. And when you get into these case studies over and over and again, what we have, even with the Dubuque phenomena, which I'll get to in a second, you have entities who were inside of bodies that did not look like the apparitions themselves. And so now what you have is the apparition of that entity inside of the fetus it had created in the womb.
Right.
And you hit on it before with the occult ritual. And so now we have the replication of species, where literally it's like the soulless was inhabited.
Right. And that's what Crowley was trying to do this thing with a golem to create a homunculus where it's a soulless being. And I mean, he had some he would try to create it through different types of sex and combining different kinds of blood with the semen. And it's very weird, but it makes sense with the function of what they're trying to do and to incarnate these. I mean, ever since John Dee talking to these guys, the guys, you know, the non-corporeal.
Them dudes.
Yeah, yeah, them dudes are like the Marquis of Hell and how many demons he has in his legion, you know, like how long has that been in order? And before we were even incarnate as humans here, like this is fascinating to me.
Oh, it's deep. Oh, we're going to get deeper, brother. We're going to get deeper. Awesome. So. Yeah, what we have here again is a self-replication of species. And we have, and we're going to have the missing fetus syndrome. We just didn't realize that we had blocked that phenomenon off and created a whole new religion called ufology. And so essentially what is occurring is you have an entity that is finding solace, S-O-L-A-C-E, in the solace.
That's why they demonize society so hard. They make us all like follow like moral relativity and like to enhance our ego and to separate from the oneness. And everybody's walking around as like a, you know, not everybody, but a lot of people are doing satanic things in their normal everyday life and like empowering those same type of feeder demons that like Lynn was talking about, like the addictions and the, you know, being stuck in this negativity and depression, and that feeds the other ones that, So like they're engineering us as food cattle to
hosts. And yeah, the parasitic model is one that I have been leaning heavily into because it fits. It's not a, you know, it's not pareidolia or whatever. It really is what's occurring. And so the idea was that they are replicating themselves.
Right.
That's wild.
So that way they can have a body that fits the sensations that they have. Like maybe they were able to do other things and that maybe that, I mean, I don't know if I believe all that stuff, but you know, the reptilian shapeshifters, like, what is that?
I don't know about the reptilian.
You know, but
I'm still on the fence
same here. But I mean, I've heard people that were like Jay Parker talks about how his parents were mad that they didn't have enough reptilian blood or whatever to be able to shapeshift. And and I'm wondering if maybe the beings are able to inhabit their bodies and with ceremonial magic, maybe transform into the form that they wish to have, because they, that way it's the invasion instead of the birth, the separate, the other way of incarnating, you know?
Correct.
But it's still very weird. And I don't know like about all of it. I can't confirm. It's strange. Of course.
I mean, what we're just talking about right now is already strange.
Exactly. Yeah. Whoa. But Jerry was saying that they are parasite. You know, Jerry Marzinski, and you know, and that goes right along with what you are telling us here. And
correct.
It only makes sense.
Yes, sir. And to go into a deeper way here, if I could, our current model in ufology suggests that the woman is the host of the hybrid.
Right.
Well, let's play with that idea real quick. So when we're looking at this self-replication of species, the idea would be the consciousness of the entity staring into the eyes of the experiencer. That consciousness is placed within the fetus. The fetus bears the likeness of the consciousness within it. So you would have fleshly eyes, but essentially ghostly vision.
Right.
You would have something, that entity has been reincarnated or transmigrated into, a new biological avatar. Now we see this happening in The Golden Bow. James Frazier talks about a way a soldier had in Mesopotamia on the battlefield. If he was mortally wounded, he would dispossess his own body before the moment of death and then place his consciousness in someone else. We knew that as possession and demonology, but we had it wrong.
Right. The Indians had do the same thing. It's called the POWA, P-O-W-A technique. And that's at the point of death, their consciousness can leave and they can choose, instead of going through the bardos and going through the reincarnation, they can choose to ride in another person's body and experience the things they are experiencing. There's a director that did a film called Enter the Void. His name is Gaspar Noé. And that book is basically the Buddhist or the Book of the Dead. And it shows the consciousness of the spirit going into others and experiencing what they're experiencing and feeling what they feel and then flying and floating, you know. So this is so we might also have that ability to do. I mean, like our spirit.
I think they're think they're recruiting people. I think they're recruiting people to that path. But so getting back to this idea, so the Apocrypha of John says it made copies of bodies. What? Copies of the same body, whereas, and you're going to see this, all of them look alike. They have a uniformity to their appearance. And the idea is you kill one of them, it doesn't matter, because that's not where the proto-intelligence is.
Okay, so it's like ants are. It's like a hive mind.
Yes, sir.
Like the Stranger Things, like this ghost demon on the other side of the upside down, it like inhabits consciousness and they're a hive mind. Or even
masking
like
itself.
Or even like the Matrix with like Agent Smith. It could be any one of those people.
Yeah, it's here. Absolutely.
Yeah, wow.
And that's the problem we're looking at here. Okay, so you have a multiple, you have a, first of all, you have an intelligence that self-replicated into the hybrid itself. Well, I thought the hybrid was the child. It is. But the reason it is a hybrid is because of the consciousness within it. Now, let's move deeper. So getting back to this idea where it bears the image of the apparition, then we start getting into, obviously, incubi accounts, and we look at the idea of incubi beings and succubi entities. And there were two seminal researchers in demonology and vampirology that began to document something that I think is worth discussing. Number one, it was the victimology of these intelligences. And for the longest time, we believed that the phenomenon was sourcing its secretions based upon the vitality of the male and the fertility of the woman. And that was true to a degree. But wouldn't you know that a lot of the grimoires handwritten and penned by practitioners in the medieval periods and before that, they required certain secretions from the female and male?
Right.
In that a lot of these manifestations of incubi and succubi were not based on the fertility or the vitality, but were based upon the efficacy of these secretions when used in ritual magic.
Right.
And where are we at? Right back at the altar.
Right.
Practitioners in antiquity. It's crazy stuff. Crazy stuff.
And that's the blood and the semen and the starfire of the, you know, the female menstruation blood and all of these things. And then you look at modern day, you got Marina Abramovich like throwing blood and poo on the wall. And, you know, and these, really, and I actually just spoke with a classical philologist named Eamon Hillman a couple episodes ago. And he was talking about the ancient drugs of antiquity. Were a lot of them were derived from the human body. Like they would apply snake venoms and stuff to children so that when they get older, their bodies secrete, like they would milk from the breast, and that would be anti-snake venom, you know, like an anti-venom.
Right.
So they had this entire medical corpus of knowledge that, and it was, and now everybody just thinks that medicine comes from oil byproducts, you know,
right? But really, it's pharma,
right? To know yourself and to understand what our bodies are capable of. I mean, these magic vehicles that we inhabit, like, can be receptors for spirit. Like, I mean, we live in a magic thing, and for us to just be like, whatever, it's just material, who cares? If I need any help, I need to look to an external authority, some kind of other source to fix myself, even though even Jesus was like all the, you know, like, or the Oracle of Delphi, you know, all the worlds like is within ourselves, you know, and we need to discover that. And so it's very interesting. I love
it's all there.
Tie it all together. Yeah.
Absolutely, brother. And that's what we're here to do, man. So looking back, even Montague Summers and Father Sinistrari believed that, let me say this, based upon the secretions they had collected on the clothing of incubi victims, they believed that this intelligence was milking the carcasses of the recently deceased.
Wow.
Which changes the model a little bit. Why? Because the intelligence was sourcing what it needed for ritual magic.
Right.
Not just, right, mirroring exactly what the recipe in the rite demanded. Semen from recently hung men.
Wow.
So yeah, it's crazy stuff. Wow. But what we're seeing here.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, I was going to say this kind of ties into the Hyros Gamos of the ancient, like the Ishtar cults and the Inanna cults and Cybele, and they they were like mutilating their genitalia, some of them, and like removing their ability to make secretions. And then they become higher in the order of the priests. It's very weird how that.
Yeah, celibacy or something. It's very strange. I know people who haven't went that far.
But, of course, like, let's hope they don't. Like,
yeah, right. They just weren't good with women. I'm just kidding. I'm kidding. No. Yeah. So here we are, and so that's demonology. That is incubi, succubi, and then in the 16th century we move into another incarnation of this phenomenon, and that is the Dybbuk phenomenon. And I'm only covering this because this is my first time on your show, and I know that they're going to be first-time listeners. So there are a lot of people that follow me, and they're like, God, Nathan, I heard this already. Like, I understand.
But the book, the guy that gave Epstein all of the cameras in his house, gave him that house for $1. The guy who is he says he has a Dybbuk. What is his name?
Wexler.
Yeah, Les Wexler.
Mm. Wexler, yeah.
Yeah, he's the head of the snake, as the victim painted in her painting. Like that. So this dude works with the Dybbuk, and that's how he gets so powerful, and that's why they make these deals. So please continue. We need to learn about the Dybbuk.
Yeah, Dybbuk. So, and this is, again, another propagandistic method and lie, I should say, that the phenomenon has put out there, that the Dybbuk or Dybbuk is strictly about a haunted wine box or haunted wine boxes or hauntings themselves. It's not true, because the Dybbuk phenomenon in the 16th century centered around a practice. It was called the Doctrine of Gilgal. And the Doctrine of Gilgal was essentially a group of people, again, who would go out into undisclosed locations. Sometimes it would be graveyards. They wouldn't tell anybody about it. They would just all meet there. And so, you know, imagine midnight, you go out there, there's like 100 people in a graveyard. You're thinking, what is going on? Well, what they were leaning on is they were trusting that there were entities in the afterlife who had the ability to possess their bodies. And in a sense, they would have two souls in their body, and they would become wiser, become wealthy. They would have knowledge of the afterlife and all of that. It's the same phenomenon, same approach, even. And so these practitioners are modeling themselves after people who've lived and died. And so let's say if there was some Jewish master or sorcerer or magician, they would go out and prostrate themselves on the grave. And then believing that when they go home, the entity, the person rather, I slipped up with that one, the person would come find them and endue them with power upon high. Now, wouldn't you know that in fact there was an intelligence that wanted to become incarnate again? And
Right.
so
It's
the
been
there were
waiting for this, right, all this time.
exactly. Absolutely. And so there were moments, this is wild. There were experiencers who women were going home, going to bed in induced into dream states. They were encountered, confronted rather. They were confronted by entities that began to operate exactly like the incubi entities in demonology. Now, why am I finding them in D-Book literature if these are two separate intelligences? They're not. They're
Right,
not.
because it's a common experience for all humanity. We're all,
Correct.
we're all
And
attacked.
right. And so during these encounters, the entities go through the same methodology, inducing them into really, really deep sleeps, in introducing an image to them that they would trust, copulating with them. And then the next morning, these women were getting up from their slumber, going in the shower, taking washing up, going to work, and wondering, man, that was a crazy dream last night. And I'm glad it was just a dream because whatever my husband or ex-husband or whatever, that was wild stuff. And the feelings, the emotions were heightened, the sexuality was heightened. It was very weird. Thankfully, that was just a dream. And then they would look down and find ligature marks on their hands and wrists.
Whoa, like Rosemary's Baby, like
Correct.
she's got the
That I was,
scratches, right?
yes, sir. That's coming from actual research. And suddenly they realize that these scarifications, these bruisings on their bodies, directly correlated with the experience they were told was just a nightmare.
But the people telling them it's just a nightmare might be part of the
Right.
cult
That's
there.
exactly correct. Correct. Absolutely. Part of the propaganda. Well, don't even, it's
Right.
just a nightmare. It wasn't. These were actual events, just like mine was. It's actually taking place. And so we could stop there and it'd be a great show. It'd be okay, we got it. Oh, great. But if we go deeper here, the same women that had encountered these intelligences in their nightmares began to be possessed by the consciousness of the entity they encountered in the nightmare.
Right.
What?
So the encounter links them to that consciousness, and then from that
Correct.
on, they're plagued by it, right?
Correct.
Like they're
It steps
infected
into
by
their
it.
world. Yes, like a
Right.
parasite. Absolutely, found a host. And so now we have cases, and this is in, I got two books up here, Between Two Worlds and then Spirit Possession in Judaism. I think it's by Barry Goldish. But anyways, now we have these individuals going and presenting themselves to the exorcists and the priests. And we find one of these cases in a Baghdad exorcistic rite where they were experiencing this too. And they were like, okay, first of all, did you encounter a man in a dream? Yes. Okay. What did he do? They would go through the whole scenario. We had intercourse. Okay. Now you're possessed by that entity. Yes, I am. So it wasn't just assault. It was penetration that led to possession.
Right.
And now that entity is existing inside a new body. And so there for a moment, we were like, okay, not we, but they were like, the pathology is mutating. We never heard of that in incubi literature, right? It's evolving, evolving, evolving. We did have missing fetus syndrome in incubi, right? The hybrid, all that. But what's this? That's the question. What was this? And so now these experiencers are possessed by the entity. And when they're presenting themselves to the priests and the exorcists and the rabbis, now they're showing. I don't know if you could see me on camera. They're showing, my friend.
Yeah, like pregnancy.
Pregnancy. Now these priests and rabbis are performing the Lavouche method, which was two thumbs on the wrist. They felt two heartbeats in the same body and two pulses in the same body. They were pregnant. And this led them to ask the most important question within all of the hybridization research. Was she pregnant by that entity she encountered in her dreams, or was she pregnant with the entity she encountered in her dreams?
But if it's all one consciousness, it's both.
It's both, my friend, both. Right. Which leads us directly back to the Apocrypha of John. Right? Consciousness. Now, what this does with the model is it means that the host is not the female. Right. The host is the fetus.
Right.
Changes the game. Now, wouldn't you know, my friend, that when the intelligence took the consciousness out, the possessing entity, it also took the fetus, gone instantaneously, together, right. Gone.
Because those are bound by the love of the creator, and the thing doesn't need, the Dybbuk doesn't want that or whatever. It's like, it's trying to inhabit, it's trying to steal the body from that.
Correct. This is fascinating. And so when I hear people, we're almost up to, okay. When I hear people in modernity claim that the hybridization began in modernity, well, I've heard people, you know, that are twice my age. Well, this stuff didn't start happening until the early 60s. Nonsense. That is its newest incarnation. Keeping on with this incubi, succubi, Dybbuk narrative,
right?
The earliest, according to ufology, and this doesn't sound like an alien, the earliest incubi or succubi, rather, case study in ufology occurred in 1957. Okay.
Huh.
Antonio Boas. He died in 1992. He was a 23-year-old farmer from Brazil. He said that on October 15th, he was taken into an egg-shaped spaceship where he was stripped of his clothing, rubbed with an aphrodisiac. After collecting his blood in glass chalices, we would consider that a vampire.
Yeah.
His captors left him alone, and a small woman entered the chamber. She had a wide face, thin blonde hair, high cheekbones, narrow lips, and small ears. It soon became, she pointed to her stomach and then to the sky, and then she disappeared. After they copulated. Not new phenomena. It's old phenomena interpreted in a new way.
Yes.
This is why we have to stop compartmentalizing this intelligence.
Right.
Because if we start building walls where we should be building bridges, we will miss the footprints in the snow because, again, we'll miss it as it is evolving according to our awareness of it.
Right. So I don't know if you're familiar with Fritz Springmeier. But he writes in his books about satanic ritual abuse and trauma-based mind control and the structure and how they do it. Like, he worked with a deprogrammed multiple, and they wrote some books together. And he framed the UFO phenomenon as like a mapping system, or a way of, like, in some of the children, they have like Alice in Wonderland programming. And then they use certain right. triggers for that. And they make them think that they're in that world and that scenario when it's happening because they're dissociating. And it's a mm-hmm. way of like masking what's really happening. And in the thing in like where when these aliens, that's another form of program that's the way that he sees it. And really what's happening is they're being abducted by people that are evil people that are doing these. I mean, and maybe
those, I believe it.
Like these occult practitioners that are in the cult and that are actually harvesting the fluids, you know, and doing the breeding programs, and they are working for the demons in the other, like they are just the worker bees for the higher ups mm-hmm. that are telling them in the ceremonial magic what to do and how to do it.
That is not, I mean, not only is my research coming to that conclusion, at least with respect to their worker bees doing this for some other intelligence,
right?
They're inheriting these rituals. I mean, let me say this.
From the bloodlines they've been through all these years, right?
Right. Yeah, interweaving themselves throughout history. So this is where this blows my mind. The phenomenon wants us to believe the primordial man decided one night to extinguish his campfire, repair himself to his personal quarters, and just decided, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to go take a small piece of metal, and then I'm going to make up a name of another species called an unclean spirit, which we still can't really define. And then I'm going to carve that name into a small piece of metal. And then you know what I'm going to do? I don't know why, but I'm just going to go and plant that into another body. No. Right. That individual was given the blueprint of incarnation for that intelligence.
Yeah, who would think of that?
Really? Of course. Right. And so this gets back into the next 30 minutes. Now, when we're getting into these rituals that we have inherited as a species, specifically in antiquity, Mesopotamia, Babylon, it was not original to us. Like, it wasn't, like I said, it's okay, yes, somebody just went out and decided to do that. No. These were ladders made of letters where this intelligence gave them incantations. And then when these incantations were performed, literally to the point where the very voice inflection mattered.
Right. Speaking it into existence is the magic.
Absolutely. Right. Yes. Heschel said it in this way. And even though he's a theologian, God speaks a word, steps into it. That's exactly what these beings were doing. They were replicating through wounds and words. And so the idea that I'm working on as of late is when we're looking at these practitioners in antiquity, specifically, this is fascinating too, because I'm going to tie it together at the end, is when we're looking at specifically the earthen altar, and we say, okay, the earthen altar was designed to facilitate burnt offerings. That's why they were constructed underneath the cosmology of the stars, an open air, open sky above it. The design was so that the entity would be able to inhale, this is what we were told, inhale the fumes coming from that sacrifice.
Wow. The spirit, now, the soul, correct. Basically. Right.
Right. To feed.
Wow.
And so then it was at the dawning first breaths of that phenomenon, that development, okay, this is what I'm going to do. Then this intelligence said, okay, I'm going to incarnate. I gave you ladders made of words, and I called you to ascend as a practitioner.
Like the Aztec pyramids.
Correct. Right. It's a language. It's strange, very strange. But during these scenarios, the practitioner themselves believes they are the one that is conjuring the other.
Right.
And the model I'm working off of right now, and I spoke on this at the Awakening, it was like the last 20 or so minutes of my lecture, was that this intelligence learned that the best way to conjure us was to give us the illusion that we were the one who was conjuring.
Right. So we focus on our ego.
Correct. And the illusion of power. And so by the time the practitioner has got his 50 stones that are uncut, by the time he's sweating and out of breath and constructed the altar at a location designated by the intelligence he's worshiping, by the time he has finished with one step and two steps and three steps and gets all the way there, then he's the one, oh yeah, I'm conjuring the entity. I would suggest that we are not the conjurers. We are the ones being conjured. In this model that I'm presenting, and then when I presented in the Awakening, is that the phenomenon has given practitioners the illusion of power. And then once this intelligence, the proto-intelligence, manifests, it's at that point that you realize the entire thing was a setup.
Right. You've been a worker bee that whole time following orders.
Correct. Right. Yeah, you've opened the door. And the problem that we're facing now in the field is, yes, we may be able to pull the genie out of the bottle. But once it's here, it does not play by the rules we thought it did.
Of course.
Now, my friend, that's the truth. Yeah. Correct.
Right.
Now,
right.
The reason it does that, and this is something that it's a byproduct of the phenomenon diversifying its identity. Because demons play by demon rules. Aliens play by alien rules. Ghosts, well, of course, they act like ghosts. In what we do, not realizing that it's a singular intelligence incarnating itself, is we start to apply demon rules or even rules, ghost rules, to an intelligence that is hiding behind the archetype itself.
Right.
And then when it manifests as something wholly other than something we did not prepare for because we bought into the lie of the rules it plays by.
Wow. So people like Marina Abramovich in front of that painting, Satan summoning his minions, like she's so proud. There with Jacob Rothschild, who recently died. Thankfully, he's not here anymore. They're so proud to be minions of this force of Satan when they're just worker bees. And they think that they have all this power and everybody does follow their orders and such. But
yeah,
it's a demonic system. Especially the money system and the way government is structured, like hierarchical structures of obedience is like anywhere you see that you'll find that there's evil people doing evil things to get that power and to climb that ladder.
Right. Leveraging.
Right. It's like they're under a spell where they need to be more powerful person and have bigger ego. And like, that's the core of Satanism in general is like, to think of themselves as God, like I am better than,
and correct,
you know, and then the rest of it follows, and, you know.
You're right, my friend, you're right. The idea that the phenomenon is courting our human condition.
It's studied us all this.
There we go.
Of time.
Now we're going to get into it. So with the parasitic model itself, there is an evolution we see, and this is why I believe that this has been a part of nature ever since the dawning first breaths of our species, because we have other models of this intelligence and exactly how it operates. So in the predator and prey scenario, we have entities in nature. One is the spider-tailed Iranian viper. This is incredible.
Okay.
Where the snake itself goes through the various stages of symbiosis, symbiotic relationship. It does that with its prey. It coexists with its prey, a bird, let's say a bird, that's what it commonly eats, and it co-evolves with a bird. And so watching what the bird eats, it eats spiders. So then what this snake did is through the eons of, and I'm not saying it's evolution as we classically know it, but it evolved to where its tail now looks like a spider.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's amazing.
Oh, we're going to it.
Yeah, like the genes themselves have a consciousness, and they know what to build next, which mutation works best. Every incarnation that a snake is born, it's trying to get towards a certain direction, and everybody's right. Like, oh, there's no intelligent design. But I'm saying like legit, the DNA itself has intelligent design, and it's combining the two people or two, you know, separate genetics, and it's figuring out which one's best and which one to do, you know, so that in itself is intelligence. So even atheists need to like see that is true, you know.
They do yeah, it's just tough. It's tough to admit that. It's like, what? But so what this snake did as a predator is it realized that in order to capture its prey, it had to diversify itself. See what I was saying before?
Right.
It diversified its identity. Well, we compartmentalize it because we're falling into that same trap. And so by diversifying itself, now it becomes what its prey wanted to capture.
Right.
And And so now what it does is instead of hunting, it allows itself to be hunted. And it lays its tail out like this. And then its prey, with its vision, looks down and says, okay, that's a spider. And it does exactly what we do as a species with this intelligence. A spider plays by spider rules. A spider does what a spider does. Just so happens, that's what I want to eat today. And so then it descends down upon that spider, working on the model of, okay, it's exactly what I want, and I know how to capture it.
Right.
By the time its talons dig into it, the rules change. Now it realizes this is not a spider at all. Then it makes eye contact with the proto-intelligence behind the mask. You see where this is making sense? Hopefully,
totally.
And now it realizes whatever that is in the darkness doesn't play by spider rules. And then they I wasn't the one hunting at all. I was the one being hunted. I wasn't the one conjuring it. It was the one conjuring me.
Right. So we're falling into this trap but people in that follow this dark occult path and the left-hand path, and they follow their ego and they follow the separation from the oneness, and they're just walking the same like often trodden path that all the other dark occultists have gone, and they've become slaves. I mean, just look at Crowley. Look at how he destroyed his life and like became a junkie. And will was his favorite. His most important thing was human will, but he was a heroin junkie and he couldn't do anything but do more heroin, you know, couldn't even have
more
children.
Vices than anyone.
Yeah. Like, and yeah, so it's a path of destruction. It's a path, and it's clearly laid out by an intelligent force, which wants to use us and our power. Like that guy became a powerful individual. Like influenced our consciousness for many years. A lot of those people that were under the spell of that and under that way of thinking, and where we can, you know, work with demons and, you know, all it goes back to John Dee, and there's people today that are doing this. Yes, exactly. Right.
Yeah. We're and let's get there for a second, because I know we're running out of time, but John Dee Edward Kelly performing their rituals and scrying. And then all of a sudden there's a cloud. Did you know that? I read that about 2 years ago. It blew my mind. A cloud with little green men looking out at them, flying in the room. Separate phenomenon, of course. Why? Because the phenomenon wants us to believe that. And now in the 21st century, this is incredible too. our leading scientist right now, he was a part of the invisible college that Diana Walsh Pasulka often refers to. He is now in the desert in New Mexico, building earthen altars underneath an open sky. What?
Right.
Why is he doing this? Because, well, they're giving him technology, and then our government is filtering that technology back down to Lockheed Martin. Yeah, black budget projects, and I'm trying to reverse engineer this. Where did that begin? Because secular ufology wants us to believe that it originated in the 21st century and that, well, yeah, Tim Taylor just got the harebrained idea to do it. It's not true. That originated in antiquity, my friend.
Babylon, like absolutely. Canaanites, you know, the Moloch fires, they would, you know, the burnt yes. offering. And they're still doing that with the SRA cults and genie the bloodline cults. They do that to children. And those, like, I've spoken to victims who say that that stone, that those, that altar has been there for ages, and mm-hmm. it's going to be there for ages. And that's what fuels her to fight this so that, you know, we can right. stop the killing. Yeah. But that, you know, that altar is soaked with the blood. Same thing as with the Aztecs, that, you know, the blood is
right.
the life.
Blood.
Yeah. So, and that's under the open stars, right? So,
you're correct, my friend. You're correct. And again, this is the danger we face by falling into the fallacy of compartmentalizing this stuff. I mean, again, let's go back to when ufology began its roots, at least as we know it, where we have Albert Bender. I referred to this earlier in the interview, right. building an altar in his attic. Conjuring extraterrestrials. Okay. Sure. Or like I said, George Hunt Williamson, homemade Ouija boards, contacting aliens, star people. No, again, if that's the correct model, then we can include all of those beings conjured by seances and Ouija boards. Right. And if that's the case, then we have a major problem on our hand. Unless we see it as a singular intelligence masking itself throughout history.
Well, that makes sense to me. If anybody has read Tracy Twyman's book with Alex Rivera, it's Baphomet. And she speaks about, and she writes about the Knights Templar speaking with this entity. Mm-hmm. And she spoke with entities with a Ouija board, and it like told her how. So first she was talking to Nicholas DeVere, who mm-hmm. wasn't really very good at speaking through the board, and then he told her to talk to Kane, and Kane was like better at doing the board, and then Kane introduced them to Baphomet, and then Baphomet tells them how to do a new board, like, and it's like a chessboard kind of, and it has different mm-hmm. and then he explained about how the murder of Jesus was like the taking of the king, and chess is like comes from the beyond. It's not even mm-hmm. like a human game. And it was like acted out in people, and like Jesus was the king and whatever. You and know, so it was like the defeating of good by evil. Go ahead, please.
I'll tell you what, you know, my friend, because this gets back and we could probably wrap it up after this, but okay. watch this, because you hit the nail on the head. When we're getting down to that book and what they're alleging, this is incredible. Did you know that Jeffrey Epstein had in his temple, or in his house rather, on the island?
Yeah.
He had a massive chessboard, and the pieces were made to look like actual people.
Wow.
Oh, even wow. more than that, right? Let's go down that yeah. path.
Whoa.
I did a show on David Icke's channel, Iconic, and the reason they reached out to me is because I, you know, they saw one of my interviews and I was talking about this very subject. And unbeknownst to me, they had just done an interview with Juliette Bryant, who was an experiencer, a victim rather, of Jeffrey Epstein's. And she was oblivious to my research, so were they almost. But, you know, they found out about it and then was like, wait a minute, we've got to have this guy on. And the reason was because Juliette Bryant said that when she was being victimized by Epstein, at the moment of insemination, took his mask off and stared into her eyes.
Whoa.
Now, at that point, I was like, it's one thing to know it's true. It's another thing to know it's true. I was like, oh, my God. So it's still occurring. These are not figments of our imagination, my friend. These are real events. These are real rituals.
And Epstein wanted to have a farm in Arizona where he was breeding women, right? Yeah.
Yes. Yes. And he also had a ritual bath in his temple on Epstein Island.
Right. With the kids that carry in the water. I saw the video.
Right. There was a reason he picked young girls because they were most likely virgins. It's terrifying when you get into this.
Wow. Yeah.
But,
man. So this is wonderful. And I delight in these conversations, and this was one of my favorites so far. So if we could maybe schedule another one for the future sometime.
Sure.
And I would like to continue this if you're willing.
Absolutely.
Where can people find you and your information?
Yeah, so I'm all over YouTube, and you just look me up, or even all of the platforms, if you will. But specifically, I do have a YouTube channel. I'm not on it. I mean, I've never, like, I think the last video I put up was a year or two ago. But I say that to say this. Whenever I do an interview that's uploaded to YouTube, I add it to my playlist of guest appearances. And I think I'm up to like 112 now. So if anybody wants to know more about my research, plug in there. You can follow me on Instagram. And I keep everybody updated on my Instagram. I used to have a website. I'm going to get back to having one, but it was just too much to maintain. So I think I'm going to actually hire somebody to maintain it. I think that's easy.
Right. I'm the same way. I don't have my own. I have a page on with a group of others that are, you know, and they're helping because I'm poor SOB. So like it costs money to have a website.
It does.
So I understand completely. So we can, your Instagram, ID, where can we find it?
It is the Nathaniel J. Gillis.
Okay.
And then underneath that, it'll say they're playing by different rules because they're playing a different game.
Okay. And I will link your YouTube and your Instagram. And is there anything else that you would like the listeners to know before we?
Yes. So I'm introducing, and we'll talk about this the next time we do a show, is
awesome.
I'm introducing a new field of research called necronetics. And I believe this is the way the phenomenon or this intelligence is self-replicating its species. It's a combination of necromancy and genetics.
Necronetics.
So it's a new field. And because I didn't know what I was – people want me to be a demonologist, and to a degree I am that. But as you can tell by our conversation, my research is leading me into waters that have been untouched. And
fantastic.
So I had to come up with something else. Yeah.
Well, that's why you're here. Like you are you're expanding our awareness in new ways, and we are very thankful for that.
Thank you for having me on, my friend. It's been a blast.
Oh, wonderful. This is a wonderful conversation. And thank all you listeners for listening. And the links will be below, and hopefully we will have more conversations with Mr. Nathaniel Gillis in the future. And thank you all again. We will see you next time on Wake the Dead.